From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The president came in confident to his sixth State of the Union address last night, faced with a new all-Republican majority Congress. And he was all about middle-class economics.
Tonight, together, let's do more to restore the link between hard work and growing opportunity for every American.
The economy is growing, he said. Deficit shrinking, energy booming. He called for free community college, paid sick leave, taxing the rich, and an end to stalled, bitter politics. Republicans said, whoa now, this hour On Point, the State of the Union. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What did you think of the president's address? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Candy Crowley, veteran political correspondent at CNN. She served as chief political correspondent and host of the CNN talk show State of the Union, a long time there, Big View political reporter and analyst. Candy Crowley, welcome back to On Point. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Also from Washington, Matt Lira is with us. He was deputy executive director at the National Republican Senatorial Committee. He's worked with Republican leaders Eric Cantor, Paul Ryan, Mitt Romney, and more, now headed to the Harvard Kennedy School's Institute of Politics. Matt Lira, welcome.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
And from Mobile, Alabama, Cynthia Tucker Haynes is with us, Pulitzer Prize-winning winner for her long-running syndicated column. She wrote for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution for more than 20 years. You may know her from her appearances on MSNBC. Cynthia Tucker Haynes, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be here.
Candy, you've seen a lot of these speeches over the years. You know the kind of point that this president is at, sixth one here, 6 years in, and now looking out on a Republican Congress. How would you characterize his strategy, his approach in what he laid out last night?
Oh, it was kind of a what election speech. Look, he could have gone two ways. One way is to say the American people said something in November and I'm listening and interpret whatever it was that he thought they said. Or he could do what he ended up doing, which is I'm still president. It was kind of the upscale version of I've got a pen and a phone. I'm still going to do things I want to do. I'm still going to push things I want to push. And by the way, if you mess with the stuff I've already done, I'll veto it.
Bill Clinton, when he faced a Congress that had turned over for the first time in many, many years to Republicans in, 1995, went the other way. He reached out. He triangulated hard. He went toward the center. How do you interpret why the President Obama went this way, Candy?
Well, my guess is he didn't think it would do him much good. Second of all, I don't think it's in his nature given what he still has on his agenda. So I think it was a number of things. And this is a president who believes he's on the right path and he had to sell the economy as healing or healed, however you want to look at it. And here's what we do next. And I think that he said he's not going to go quietly into the dark night. He is determined not to be a lame duck. We'll see what happens. But honestly, you know, and I know he's got about 9 or 10 months to do anything big.
Cynthia Tucker Haynes, what did you make of the president, especially his appeal to get past bitter politics? There's a lot of detail we'll look at here. But at the end of the speech, he came around, he reminded everyone of his big sort of first time on the national stage speech where he said, we're not a red America or a blue America, but a United States of America. How about that? He's looking out at a pretty stony-faced Republican opposition that controls both houses of Congress, Cynthia.
Well, I took particular note of that part of his speech, not only because I thought it contained some of the soaring rhetoric that we don't expect to hear anymore in a State of the Union speech, but also because he was calling out the people like us on the radio, pundits. Pundits, he said, have become cynics because when we talk about the 2004 speech, we say you fail spectacularly in uniting us that this period of time has the country is more polarized than ever. And so I thought it was very courageous of him to go back and say, despite what you pundits say, I still believe in this. We may not have accomplished it yet, but I still believe in this, and this is a goal that for which we should aim.
Matt Lira, I do not want to be a pundit. I do not want to be a cynic. But looking at the situation last night, I mean, who can't but help rising to that message of national unity? It's very strong. And yet, the Congress that he's facing is not of his party and not that receptive to most of what he's proposing.
Well, I feel, and the president also is outlining areas where he disagreed with the Republican agenda. And so there was, there was almost a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde nature to last night's speech. There was a part of the president's speech, arguably half or so, where he was very strenuously outlining, almost taunting the Republican Congress with, here's what you can't do and here's the priorities. And, in the case of the Keystone Pipeline, casually dismissing it almost as a small thing. And so sort of taunting the Congress as a partisan. And then all of a sudden, shifting gears back to the president we remember from 2004, the convention speech and, of course, the 2008 campaign. And so from the Republican perspective, I'd say it was very kind of jarring to have, I think that message of optimism and hope, which was very inspirational, would have seemed more genuine and perhaps would have, been more effective had that been, more of the exclusively the nature of the speech. It was very hard to tell, which president, was the real president last night. Time magazine late last night published an article that said it was one State of the Union, but it had two presidents. And so one was trying to unite the country, and the other was asking the country to pick sides.
Candy, was there a way – pardon me, Matt, but Candy, was there a way for the president to do it all last night, call for unity, stay true to his vision, and do it all seamlessly in one speech without contradiction?
No. Yes and no. He started out, which I thought was interesting, saying, I'm not going to – and I can't remember his exact words. It's something like, I'm not going to talk specifics tonight. I'm going to talk, big thematic things. And then he went on to talk specifics and talk about the things that, don't touch this Congress, do this Congress. Mm-hmm. So in the way he constructed it, no, you can't have a thing where here are my lines. Here's what I want to do. You need to come go along with it and then do. I thought it just sounded like two different speechwriters had written it. If the whole idea was bipartisanship, it kind of, to me, missed the nod to, hey, I'm in a changing dynamic here. Bipartisanship, and now it's even more – now that there's an all-Republican-controlled Capitol Hill, here are the things I think we could do together. I don't think there was enough of that to justify what kind of came on at the end, which did seem sort of, dystonic to the rest of the speech.
I mean, in fairness, he was very explicit in saying, look, we may disagree deeply, but let's have a civil conversation about this. Let's have a good debate. Above all, the president looking to convey that the country has moved out from beneath what he called the shadow of crisis. Hear from early in the speech last night.
America, for all that we have endured, for all the grit and hard work required to come back, for all the tasks that lie ahead, know this. The shadow of crisis has passed, and the state of the union is strong.
How hungry he has been to be able to say that. The unemployment numbers give him plenty of room to say that lately. But that home stretch of any second-term presidency, of course the president wants to be able to assert that. He took that and went straight to, well, what are we going to do with this? We have an opportunity to shape our country for the next 15 years. For this century, he made it all about middle-class economics.
Will we accept an economy where only a few of us do spectacularly well? Or will we commit ourselves to an economy that generates rising incomes and chances for everyone who makes the effort?
And there's the big theme last night. Let's hear from our listeners. Tom in Detroit, Michigan. Thanks for calling, Tom. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
In terms of that last line that you played from his speech last night, I was taking notes, and I really, really highlighted that. I didn't think the president did well last night in terms of, setting his agenda. And also in terms of, if you look at during his term in office from where we were, we were almost off the edge and going into an abyss of an economic tsunami.
It was bad. It was bad. There's no question.
It was bad. And look at where we are now. We're out of the dark, just like he said. That cloud's passed from over us. And, the number of jobs that have been created, you know, under his administration, I mean, it's like summertime, the living is easy, fish are jumping, and the cotton's high.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if the gravy is quite that deep in every bowl, Tom, but it's sure a lot better than it was. And I appreciate your call from Detroit. Matt Lira, somebody observed this morning that if the last presidential election had gone the other way, if it had been President Mitt Romney standing there last night, looking at this kind of turnaround that we do, in fairness, have in no small part, the applause would have just rolled down in waves. Was the president getting his due from both sides of the aisle last night, Matt, given that the economy has done a lot better lately?
Well, one of the special things about State of the Union night is the pomp and the circumstance. There's a certain degree of theatrics, in the night that, you know, it benefits the president in the sense that he gets to be, you know, the nation's leader and walks down the aisle and is mobbed by the Congress. You know, and the flip side of that coin is, you know, there's a partisan element to the applause that's, you know, well established, decades old. I feel like that is a long standing tradition for how the applause is metered out almost strategically, and it's just part of the overall theatrics of the event. So I think last night was keeping in that tradition.
Everybody watching the applause meter. Here's the president saying, "We were told our thing wasn't working, but boy, has it worked," he said.
"At every step, we were told our goals were misguided or too ambitious, that we would crush jobs and explode deficits. Instead, we've seen the fastest economic growth in over a decade, our deficits cut by two-thirds, a stock market that has doubled, and healthcare inflation at its lowest rate in 50 years.
The president looking for a hallelujah chorus there last night in his sixth State of the Union address. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking about the president's State of the Union address, State of the Union approach, State of the Union vision, and the Republican response this hour with Candy Crowley. You know her from her many years at CNN, big political reporter and analyst there. Matt Lira is with us. He was with the National Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee, has worked for and with Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan, Cantor, and more in the GOP. Cynthia Tucker Haynes is with us from Mobile, Alabama today, Pulitzer Prize-winning longtime columnist with many years at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Here's the president saying, middle-class economics work.
Middle-class economics works. Expanding opportunity works. And these policies will continue to work as long as politics don't get in the way.
Yeah, politics, as in democracy, as in, Republicans won a majority in both houses of Congress. Here was a little bit from the response of Republican freshman Senator Joni Ernst of Iowa, outlining Republican priorities for the new Congress.
We'll work to correct executive overreach. We'll propose ideas that aim to cut wasteful spending and balance the budget with meaningful reforms, not higher taxes like the president has proposed.
And here, Republican Senator Ted Cruz of Texas on Fox News saying it's just too much of the same old, more of the same from the president. Ted Cruz.
It reminds me of the classic Saturday Night Live skit with Christopher Walken, where, if you remember, there's a band playing and his solution to every problem is more cowbell, more cowbell. Well, for President Obama, more cowbell is more taxes, more government.
More taxes, more government. Ted Cruz responding there. Candy Crowley, where did you see room for the president and this Congress to work together? I thought I heard some riffles of readiness on that front, maybe around a trade agreement with Asia, which he made a lot out of, or maybe around infrastructure. Was he hinting at somehow there might be a deal? You give me a bunch of infrastructure spending and maybe I'll give you the Keystone Pipeline. What did you hear as possible room to run together here, Candy?
Trade for sure. I mean, but that's always been the case. The case is that he has a lot of Republicans. His problem with trade deals is actually
his own party.
More liberal Democrats than it is Republicans. So certainly trade. I didn't hear a deal coming down the pike about Keystone, but I may have nodded off. I don't know. I didn't hear that. I think when you listen to those two back to back, as we did the president, and then you hear the Republican response, that it very starkly points out why the Republicans have such a tough go when they begin to argue the agenda. Because look at what the president says. How about expanding overtime and helping more with child care and minimum wage and access to free community college, and let's expand sick leave. And then you get the Republicans talking and they say, well, now about, you know, not spending more, let's not spend any more money and let's bring down the deficit. The president gave a very direct pitch to the middle class, which is great because most everybody in America thinks they are middle class. So it has a lot of political expanse that he can cover there. Mm-hmm. And I think it points out some of the problems the Republicans are going to have in responding to the specifics of some of what the president talked about.
Cynthia, real politic here. Is he setting himself up to get some of these things done? Is it mainly about burnishing his legacy, making clear what he's for now that, as he says, the shadow of crisis is past? Is it mainly about setting Democrats up for 2016?
I think he was certainly establishing his own vision or reestablishing the vision that he hadn't been able to get accomplished through many years of crisis and emergency. You know, this is what he would have laid out in 2009 if we hadn't been on the verge of an economic abyss, I think. Mm-hmm. But I also think it is unfair to say that the president was strictly partisan and didn't reach out to Republicans. I think that beyond trade, there are areas where he pointed out we ought to be able to agree. He talked about infrastructure. The United States Chamber of Commerce has been talking for years about how we need infrastructure improvement. There is no reason that there can't be some compromise on that. What about tax loopholes? Why aren't there some Republicans, if they don't want to raise rates, willing to talk about closing some tax loopholes, which would raise a little bit of revenue to pay for some of these programs? So while I think the president was mostly laying out his own very ambitious agenda, I also think there was absolutely room for compromise. Ted Cruz said, all you hear from Obama is more cowbells, more cowbells. Well, all you hear from Republicans is no taxes, no more taxes, no more taxes. So it seems to me that the president said, I'm willing to hear you out. And it is time for Republicans to respond to that.
Matt, I'll bring that to you. Here's the president talking about what he called loopholes. This is the current taxes that allow fortunes to be passed on without taxes on what can be very large capital gains. Here's the president.
Let's close the loopholes that lead to inequality by allowing the top 1% to avoid paying taxes on their accumulated wealth. We can use that money to help more families pay for childcare and send their kids to college. We need a tax code that truly helps working Americans trying to get a leg up in the new economy, and we can achieve that together.
Matt Lira, you've worked with a lot of Republicans. What's the reception to the core idea here that, yet we're out of the shadow of crisis, the economy is coming back, but it's structured in a way still that is not working for everybody, and we need to get in there and through government effort rejigger that, change that? And he's describing ways to do that last night. What are you hearing on that, Matt?
Well, I think that there's agreement that there needs to be tax reform, but there's obviously disagreements about the best way to go about that. And beneath the headlines, I actually believe this is an area where there's a potential, albeit a long shot, for actual progress, if the stars align. I mean, late last night, Paul Ryan, who is the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee and has jurisdiction over this issue, did an interview with Fox News where he actually said that while he didn't agree with everything the president said in his speech, he was open to the conversation. And so, again, I don't think that the specifics of the president's tonight will have a favorable reception in Congress, but the idea of simplifying the code, creating a flatter, simpler, fairer tax code is something that obviously interests at least a certain segment of the Republican Congress,
but
and
Matt,
most notably Paul Ryan.
I'm asking about something I think more fundamental, this fundamental characterization of our economy as one that is not operating correctly or equitably, that government needs to intervene to repair that. Is there any vein in the GOP today that's open to that?
I don't think in the sense that the government needs to intervene to repair it. I think there's there's a you know, you've seen this with, you know, obviously Mitt Romney's reemergence and with some of the other 2016 potential candidates. There's a recognition that for all the progress that's been made on the economy over the last few years, there are still many people who are not taking part of that progress, and there needs to be something done and you know, to expand the opportunity in our society. I think where there is the fundamental difference between the two parties is, you know, one views government as the vehicle to expand that opportunity, and the other views the marketplace. And that's an ongoing discussion that I think our country is going to have heading into the 2016 elections. But I don't believe it's a disagreement about a purpose. It's more of a disagreement about method.
Is there a way to break out of gridlock on dug-in political positions here? The president said, just imagine.
Imagine if we broke out of these tired old patterns. Imagine if we did something different. Understand, a better politics isn't one where Democrats abandon their agenda or Republicans simply embrace mine. A better politics is one where we appeal to each other's basic decency instead of our basest fears.
Kenny Crowley, there were moments where I wondered if he was actually a little misty-eyed, a little emotional up there. Did you see that, or are you too hard-bitten for that?
I may be the latter. I'm not sure. I mean, I think that there is, for every president in the final 2 years, a kind of hard look at what have I accomplished, what have I done. And I think Cynthia is right. I think of many of these things he would have done earlier had there been an economy that he could make an argument on top of. But the economy was, you know, in the dumps, as we know. So sure, I think there probably is in this president a good deal of nostalgia, but he's not giving into it. I mean, this was his, you know, the president is still relevant speech, very much so. And so if he is misty-eyed about anything, I think it's more that he was, and he got that way, by the way, when he's talking about what he said people keep criticizing him for not being able to, you know, break the partisanship of Washington. So, I think all in all, he'd love to have Republicans cooperate. And again, I also agree with Matt and to Cynthia's point, and that is, I think Republicans are all about fixing the infrastructure. I think Democrats are as well, and then they argue over how to pay for it. I think that you've heard both parties say, let's do tax reform. Well, good luck. They've got 9 or 10 months to, that's just, I mean, do you know how many, you do, because everybody pays taxes, how many little things there are in tax bills? The idea that they can get that done with Republicans saying we want it revenue neutral, I think is a great idea. It makes me all misty-eyed around tax time, but I just don't see it happening.
We've got lots of listeners lined up here. Chris in New Orleans. Chris, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. My comment is that I think that what was going on, most importantly last night, was the president was framing the debate, setting the stage for what's probably about to be a real knockdown, drag out, ugly 2 years. And, you know, respectfully to Candy Crowley, like, I think that any pundit really needs to be honest with the American people. The Republicans are not coming into office to compromise or to sit down and negotiate. We've got the knuckle draggers who are getting ready to put out impeachment bills. So that's my comment, and I'll listen off here.
I don't know about impeachment bills, but certainly plenty of readiness to resist a lot of what was on the table last night. Chris, thanks. Ben in Newport, New Hampshire. Ben, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I mean, as you pointed out, there's a lot of room for compromise where they agree to earn income tax credit, trade, some of the tax loopholes. But this guy didn't come out to compromise. This was a partisan political speech. I won 2 elections. You know, just total partisan. He's the one that's stonewalled a lot. His fact that the economy is rolling, it's rolling for the upper incomes, for the Wall Street guys, the people he has in his cabinet, his advisors from GE that pay no taxes. On the ground, I mean, they're clueless. Out on Main Street, it's hurting.
But Ben, be fair on that point. Be fair to exactly your point, Ben. Isn't that what he was saying last night? He wants to try to address. Is that wrong?
That's what he talks about, but that's not his actions. I mean, they're clueless. If we make health care, so if you get 30 hours, you get health benefits. I mean, I think they truly thought that's what happened. But no, the way the world works, everybody gets 29 hours. if you make everybody get paid sick pay, there's less jobs out there.
But is it just hopeless then, Ben? I mean, do you want a more Ted Cruz way of doing things or a more, I don't know, social Democrat way of doing things?
Lower taxes for everybody. Don't take my word for it. John F. Kennedy figured this out in the 60s, that you lower taxes, you get more money in. It worked. Reagan lowered taxes. The government had more money to spend.
Ben, we've got it. Lower taxes and wait for that takeoff. Some people skeptical on that front after some years here as well. But, Ben, thank you. John in Detroit. You're on, John.
Thanks. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, I think we overcomplicate everything. And we spend all this time figuring out how to do this, how to do that. The bottom line is that most of the money has been taken out of the economy by a few individuals, and a consumer economy just can't function that way. When you take a look at something like Walmart, where their business plan is to, whereby approximately 60% of their employment is on some type of assistance, that, how can that function?
And you think the president is what, proposing things that would help address that? Were you with him on that front, on that concern, John?
I don't see any of our government just tackling the basic problems. There's an infinite amount of money out there, I assume, right?
There's a lot out there.
And if six individuals who own Walmart have the same amount of money as 30 million Americans, that money is basically taken out of the economy. There's not the 30 million American families with that same kind of money that are buying cars, refrigerators, houses.
John, we've got it. Matt Lira, pick this up, because this kind of lines up with the president's critique. John takes it a little further out of Detroit than the president articulated last night, but there's something related to that the basic formula that's kind of been in place since Reagan isn't working. There's too much tied up in too few hands, and the economy is bogged down because of it.
Well, I mean, it stands in contrast. I mean, it was kind of, again, getting to the duality of the speech last night. I mean, the president makes a point about how the shadow of crisis has ended, and yet at the same time is making a point about how the economy is stagnating. And so I feel like,
well, he said it's not working for all Americans. He certainly did not say it's stagnating. He said it's not working for all Americans. That's our caller's point out of Detroit. And you've worked with Republicans. Do they just have your bosses just said that's nonsense?
I feel like it's part of why we had the results in the midterms that we did. I think there's a certain amount of frustration with the status quo in the economy. I feel like people, whether it's money and resources being tied down inside government bureaucracy, or the middle class Americans, aren't feeling the economic growth that they feel that they should have. And I think that is a part of the frustration out there that's fueling a common frustration that both parties are feeling. And I think on the left, it is personified by what you're seeing through, Elizabeth Warren and many of her supporters. And I feel like on the right, that frustration has been personified for some time by the Tea Party. But it is becoming an increasingly mainstream issue. And I think you're seeing the potential Republican candidates for 2016, as well as Democratic candidates, address different policy solutions for how to address that sense of frustration.
Cynthia Tucker-Haynes, you just got half a minute before the break, but do you think the 2016 midterm elections that gave both houses to Republicans mean that Americans in the majority are still on board for the Republican answer to these problems?
No, I think that voters were just expressing their deep sense of frustration with an economy which isn't working for everybody. I don't think they're on board with Republican tax cuts.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at the president's State of the Union address last night and the Republican response with Cynthia Tucker-Haynes, long of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Pulitzer Prize-winning syndicated columnist for many years there. Candy Crowley, veteran political correspondent, recently left CNN after 27 years there. She's seen a lot go by, go down. Matt Lira is with us. He was with the National Republican Senatorial Committee. He's worked for Romney and Eric Cantor and Paul Ryan and more. The president went right back to that speech that made his name in national politics all the way back more than a decade now at the 2004 Democratic National Convention in Boston, where he said this.
You know, just over a decade ago, I gave a speech in Boston where I said there wasn't a liberal America or a conservative America, a black America or a white America, but a United States of America.
And last night, what does he believe now?
I still believe that we are one people. I still believe that together we can do great things, even when the odds are long.
I still believe we are one people. Candy Crowley, you know, that's a kind of a statement of faith there after the experience he's been through in these 6 years. It has not been an affirming road on that front for this president.
No, it hasn't. And part of it is, I think I tell people all the time, part of it is on voters who increasingly and on those who make the districts and during the every 10-year census, where people live and vote the same way. So you have a Congress that is increasingly without too much impetus to make a deal. There are fewer of the blue dogs, the Democrats in the South, who would compromise with the Republicans. There are fewer New England Republicans who would compromise with Democrats. And so, you know, he has come into a world that has become increasingly partisan up to and through his administration. So, and I believe he still believes in it. I believe in it, too. I'm just not sure when it becomes a reality or if.
How does this get resolved, Cynthia? He tried to set a big picture looking forward into, you know, decades, deep into this century. We've got to get reconfigured to do well here. And yet in the room last night, you could still very vividly feel the tension. And right after, people are not really going with the unity theme. I mean, are there seeds of unity there? Or, you know, I got Fred Barnes is writing here, Obama's blowing smoke. Lisa Lehrer, Margaret Tolliv at Bloomberg Politics say, why focus on policies that are destined to fail? Cynthia?
Tom, I wish I could be a little more optimistic about this. Like Candy, I still believe in the vision that the president laid out, but I don't think we're going to see that kind of political unity anytime soon. In fact, I think that this will continue to be our politics through the next president, whoever is elected. A lot of this hyper-partisanship, the foundations were laid even before Obama was elected. With his election, it burst into full view. And I don't think 2016 or even 2020 will see us change. I think it will take some kind of overwhelming crisis of the sort that I would like I don't want to see happen.
But
to
we just
see
had
some
that
political
crisis.
Unity.
Didn't we have that crisis?
No, I'm talking about a bigger crisis like another 9/11 or a big war against a really well-armed enemy to bring the kind of political unity that we'd like to see. And none of us wants to see that kind of crisis, but I'm afraid that's what it would take.
Matt Lira, what do you think would actually bring people into one conversation again? Do we have to have a big war or 9/11? I mean, you have to be bigger than 9/11, right? We just had that and then had a decade of terrible partisanship.
Yeah, I don't think that's necessarily necessary, though I understand the point. I feel the biggest issue right now in Washington, in my view, is that there's a deficit of trust. That over the last 6 years, the relationship, for one reason or another, and there's plenty of blame to go around, the relationship in particular between congressional leadership, I'd say of both parties, and this White House has atrophied. And both sides feel burned. Now, that's no excuse for not making progress with the opportunities we have right now. And I think there's a genuine commitment by the White House to try to do something on the issues we talked about earlier. And I believe that particularly the new Senate majority has a desire to show that they can govern. That said, the trust deficit is a very real issue that makes it difficult to tackle increasingly complex issues. And so there's a part of me that wonders, as I said earlier, there's a glimmer of a hope. And you saw that last night beneath the headlines with things like, you know, Chairman Ryan's statement that, you know, against the odds, maybe could succeed. But even in the event that doesn't, I believe that it's going to take, you know, in this is my view, a new president of either party to sort of hit the reset button and try to build that that trust with Congress. I think it's a place where, unfortunately, at this stage, it's just increasingly difficult to take on those tough issues in an atmosphere of mistrust.
Candy, do you think that Hillary Clinton would welcome the kind of trajectory that the president laid out last night? It's interpreted as trying to perhaps, among other things, set the table for a Democratic run in 2016. If it's Secretary Clinton, does she like the path that this president's speech would sort of suggest she might walk on?
Well, I think if you're talking about the specifics of it, about extended and paid sick leave, if you're talking about more help for parents who are going broke on child care, those sorts of things, absolutely. She's talked about those things in the past. So I don't know that he was trying to set the plate for her, but I do believe that you are looking at certainly the beginning of an agenda, and then whoever the nominee is, and, you know, if it's Hillary Clinton, mm-hmm. she then puts her own, pen to that and, you know, shifts things around. But I think in general, yes, I think those were the sorts of things that Democrats see themselves getting behind. And I think it's sort of the same for the Republicans, as we can talk about an agenda and how would they do things. But until there is a voice that sort of speaks for Republicans in terms of the nominee, it's kind of generalities.
Matt in Boston. Matt, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'll start off by saying that I definitely agree with the president's agenda, and I also believe that the government, you know, its primary function is to help people, and all the people get a fair shot. And so I guess my question really goes back to, so like compromise budget and taxes. I don't understand why there's such pushback on taxing the 1%. You know, it doesn't make any sense to me. I feel like I make about $50,000 a year. I'm a school teacher. I work with Republicans who feel like who push back on this issue too. And I don't understand. From my understanding, we can make a decent amount of revenue as a country from taxing the 1% and adjusting all these loopholes. I don't understand why, you know, the common citizen, someone who's not part of the 1%, would push back. I could see if the 1% pushes back, but I don't understand, why that's something we fight about. I don't understand why there couldn't be compromise there. It seems logical to me.
Matt, we'll pick it up. I can give you a little bit of one response on that front last night. This was from the Tea Party response to the President's State of the Union address. This was Republican Congressman Kurt Clawson of Florida.
Further burdening the American economy with even higher taxes is wrong. Just as more debt and more unfunded programs are wrong. The Tea Party Express and I see an America where solutions rest not in big government, but personal liberties.
There, Congressman Kurt Clawson last night. Matt Leroy, what about Matt's question? He doesn't get the Clawson view exactly. He sees the concentration of wealth at the top and says, why not tap into that if we need funds to do infrastructure and all the rest? What channel a mainline GOP response to that, Matt?
Well, I feel like, you know, one, there's just a fundamental difference that the tax code should be used for redistributive purposes. I mean,
what about infrastructure?
I'm sorry?
What about infrastructure? That's not exactly straight redistribution.
Well, I think that's a separate issue. I mean, we're talking about the tax code, mm-hmm. There are revenue neutral ways to pay for infrastructure that, you know, don't require you to redistribute wealth, you know, targeting the 1% specifically. I feel, the Republican vision on tax reform is still evolving, but, you know, the principles of having a simplified code that's has flatter rates or more equal rates across the board, I feel, is the general operating principle. And so it's less about targeting one group of people against another and pitting, you know, sort of a class warfare argument, and more about saying, you know, let's all chip in a fair amount with a simplified code with flatter rates that are candidly probably lower than the current rates, but because the tax code has been simplified, you could potentially increase revenue that way. You know, there's a lot of detail, the devil's in the details there. But I think the Republican sort of mainstream response to that would be, you know, we just don't believe philosophically that, one, it's productive for the economy to take money out of the marketplace, and two, it's not – the tax code shouldn't be used to as a weapon, arguably, against – to pit one group against another. But on getting to infrastructure, I think, you know, there's opportunities. Chairman Bill Schuster in the House, and then of course the new Republican Senate, the infrastructure, at least the highway bill, is coming up. That's a longstanding, sort of regular occurring bill every few years, and so there's going to be an opportunity to work on some of these infrastructure issues, arguably without having to impact the tax code.
Is there any point in the political community you come out of, Matt, where people say, wealth has gotten so concentrated that we do need some redistribution, or the economy just doesn't function right? We've heard some of that out of the IMF recently, and economists saying it's just getting too locked up and lopsided.
Well, not from people that I've heard. I think the perspective that we bring to the table is how can we expand prosperity for everybody, an opportunity for everybody, rather than sort of viewing as a limited version of the world where for one group to succeed, another group has to suffer. How can we focus on expanding economic opportunity for all? And, candidly, that's been the history of, the world economy over the last 50 years. More people have been lifted out of poverty globally through the expansion of, a free market system around the world, through the end of the Cold War and the rest, because of how, the free marketplace works versus command economies. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't issues and there aren't real challenges to how do you establish sort of a conscious capitalism for the future. That's, and I feel where the debate is now, to be totally frank, is, we're still vying between two 20th century solutions. Like there's this false choice between traditional, sort of a democratic view of this challenge and a traditional Republican view. And I'm optimistic that as this debate's ongoing, there can't be sort of a new way forward that says, how do we leverage the market economy to tackle this issue?
Cynthia, many varieties or flavors of free market economy. I mean, the president talked again about infrastructure last night and how we need to lay it down to be winners in the 21st century. And Republicans may not on that, but it hasn't happened. We have so much crumbling infrastructure in this country, Cynthia.
We do, and it absolutely needs to be addressed. It would create jobs. It would help the economy long term. But let's also talk about this matter of increasing taxes and whether that would help or hurt the economy. We know because we have played this experience out. George W. Bush cut taxes when he came into office. And how much job growth was there between 1999 and 2008? There was zero net job growth. Bill Clinton increased taxes. That remains one of the most prosperous periods in American history. So it is simply not true to say that increasing taxes harms the economy. Unfortunately, Republicans have taken that as an article of faith, even though there's much evidence to show that's not true.
Candy, where do you expect maybe some motion on the backside of this speech? Where do you expect things to just lock up again?
I think we have to say that much of what the president said in specific last night, I don't see going anywhere. I don't think the free community college for everyone has a chance funded off a 1% tax. I don't think when you're looking at, paid leave, I think has some sort of chance, but it does not seem to me that of the specifics the president put out there and focused on, that there's going to be a lot of room for some of those things to pass. But I think we go back to the things we talked about. I think trade, I think tax reform is just off the table simply because there's just not enough time. I think around the margins, they can do some things, but I don't think we ought to be looking for some big comprehensive bill even though infrastructure, the transportation bill is always huge, the highway bill. So that's a big bill, but they have to do that.
If there won't be motion on so much of it, Candy, what does that say about the address itself? Could it still be a success if its agenda is not going to be implemented? Is it at laying down a marker, at laying out a vision,
or
does that mean?
I mean, I think it works for either. I mean, if the president gets it, he'll celebrate. If he doesn't, he's laid out an agenda that any number of Democrats will embrace, and likely the Democratic nominee for president will embrace much of it.
The president in his sixth State of the Union address last night saying, let's go for a new vision for the 21st century. What that's going to be totally remains to be determined here. Candy Crowley, it's great to have you with us in the morning after the day after the State of the Union. Thank you so much for joining us this hour.
Thank you.
Matt Lira, great to have you with us from Washington. Thanks so much, Matt.
Thanks, Tom.
And Cynthia Tucker-Haynes, joining us today from Mobile, Alabama. Cynthia, thank you for your insights.
Great to be here, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.